Welcome into the Wizards group chat. I'm your host, Ryan Oliver, alongside my man, Chase Carroll. Chase, the season is finally over. It was a pretty miserable one in terms of wins and losses for the Wizards. The Wizards finished the season with 15 wins and 67 losses. A very uninspiring season from a win-loss perspective, from a on-court product perspective. Our eyes probably hurt a little bit from some of the bad basketball that we watched throughout the season. But I thought towards the end, we did see progress from certain players, some positive things that we wanted to see. But all in all, it was definitely a tough season in Wizards land. But Chase, let me start with, how are you? What are your kind of thoughts on the season ending here?
I'm great, Ryan. It's been a rough season for sure. To say that I'm upset that the season's over, I would say that's not necessarily the case. Of course, I love watching the Wizards, love watching basketball, but it's time to reach our real season, which is the off season. This is where things start to matter. This season, in the grand scheme of things, I think we all knew this was what it was going to be like. So for it to be a rough year, not unexpected, but if you're watching most of the games like we are, like if you're listening to our podcast, you're probably watching most of the games as well. It was a tough watch all year. So we're going to have better things to talk about, I think, this off season when we're making some moves, hopefully, for our future, and the outlook will look a little brighter. Of course, I don't think we're going to be good for a few years, but I think this next off season is where we really start to make changes. You know, year one for the front office and year two is really where we start to build off of what we saw in year one. So rough year, but not unexpected. It's going to be brighter days ahead is the best way I can put that.
So this is the first podcast that we're doing since the season has officially ended, at least for the Wizards. I thought this would be a good podcast for us, Chase, to kind of assess what we think of the season and maybe put a grade on it from a team perspective and a front office perspective. Let's just start with the team in general. I feel like going into this season, I remember on one of the pods we did before the season where there was obviously more of the optimistic part of the season when you're in the preseason and we hadn't seen this mix of players play together yet. And there were some offseason moves. We had a new front office, obviously. So there's a bit more optimism and looking through a lens of optimism, I should say, at the team. And I know there were some people that thought the team might be better than expected. There were some that thought they would be worse than expected. It's kind of interesting to look at that now in the team only winning 15 games. I think that was even the product was even worse. And I think the people had a negative point of view with the team even thought it would be like, no one thought the team was going to be like a playoff team or anything like that. But I think the team ended up being a bit worse than even I anticipated. I thought they would probably win around like 23 games if I had to guess, but I definitely was taking the under. So whatever their under was, I was definitely on the under. So if it was 23 games, I feel like it was something like that. I was whatever the under was, I just thought they weren't going to hit that mark, but I definitely thought they'd be closer to the 20 win range than 15. If you had to give the team maybe a letter grade based on comparison to expectation to what actually we saw, what grade would you give them and why?
So hands up, I was one of those dummies that thought that this team was going to be a little better than anticipated. You know, full disclosure, I was one of those people. So did I expect us to be good necessarily? No, I thought we were going to be more competitive than we showed. Obviously, having the worst record in team history, that says something in itself. It's not unexpected that this was going to be a bad team. But I, to your point, I don't think many people knew it was going to be this bad. Obviously, looking back on it, what we see today, the roster we're looking at now, it's, I guess we could have looked at it at the beginning of the year and been like, wow, this is an awful roster. Like this is going to be a 15 win team. And for whatever reason, it did not register in my mind at the time. I thought it was going to be more competitive than we saw. And of course that we started the season with guys like Gafford and it looked a little bit better on paper, but we needed to start off with a Jordan Poole that we thought we might be getting. Potential next level, you know, take that next leap here in Washington. And he never did that. So with him being projected to be the second first best player on the team. It was a really disappointing start to the year for him, and obviously it got a little better towards the end, but he just wasn't as good as we needed him to be in order to be even a decent team, because he was supposed to be our second best player, and when Kuzma's your number one, you need at least a decent number two next to him to really put up some wins on the year, and that's just not the way it ended. But if I were to put a grade on it, I don't know how you could put anything other than an F, having the worst record in the team history. There's not too many young pieces that you can look at and think this is part of our core future. So to me, that's it was a disappointing year in that sense. Obviously, the ascension of Denny was a really bright spot this season, and I think we saw a lot, especially early on, from our rookie Bilal Coulibaly. And even towards the end of the season, we got to see Tristan Vukcevic, our second round pick, providing a little bit on the offensive end as well. So I think we have a few young guys that we can say, okay, we have something here. But the disappointment we saw early on with Poole, a little better in the point guard role, but I don't know if you can be super excited, at least about what we've seen from him quite yet. Hopefully another year, hopefully in the right position next season, we see a better Jordan Poole. But overall, I don't think you can give anything other than an F, because besides those three young guys that I just mentioned, I don't think we got to see much out of guys like Patrick Baldwin Jr. Really disappointing year for Johnny Davis. He didn't take any bit of a leap that I think a lot of us thought he might be in the offseason. And, you know, obviously Corey Kispert, I think we saw a little bit out of him, but I think we know what he is in the NBA. He's going to be a role player, and we need, you know, somebody to take that next step if it's going to be a successful young core. So to me, disappointing year. Hopefully we build off this in the offseason, because obviously I think we knew this was what it was going to be, and can't really expect anything other than this.
Yeah, I think I'm honestly a bit surprised that you gave them an F. Your reasoning makes complete sense to me. So it's not that it doesn't make sense. I think when I heard F, I was like, okay, wow, Chase is failing them on this.
Hot take.
I think that I would go C minus. And I've been listening to other Wizards podcasts and content creators, and I believe Kevin Pelton of ESPN gave them a D. I don't know if it was a D minus, but I know it was something in the D range for their season. And I remember I thought that was a bit like, wow, okay, he gave him a D. So Chase is giving him an F. I think, like I said, I think my C minus is based on comparison to team expectations and the expectations that I had for the team. I felt like this season was a season where I was going to be the least judgmental about what we're seeing on the court. And going forward, I would have more of a harsh critique of the team. I think that the front office inherited a mess where they had to deconstruct the roster, right, in order to put the team in a better long-term standing. But that takes time. It's not going to be all of a sudden the team is, it's not going to be like a night and day change. It's going to be a gradual change over time, which I know, you know, and everyone else listening to the podcast understands that. But I think that this season, there's no way that the front office expected the team to be significantly better than the product that they got. Now, I do think the team should have been better than a 15 win team. I think that expecting them to win maybe 6 to 8 more games was reasonable. I assume that the front office was working under some type of mandate to keep Wes Unseld Jr. for a certain amount of time. That's just, or at least to give him a chance. That's just my opinion. I don't know that for a fact, but I just have a hard time believing that people as intelligent as Winger and Dawkins, based on anything they had seen so far, thought Coach Unseld was the long-term coach for the team. I feel like they kind of had to rock with that for a time being to appease Ted. And I think that it's not a coincidence that they cleaned out the whole coaching staff, remaining coaching staff from the Wes Unseld era during this offseason. Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN reported that just a week or so ago, and they kept Brian Keefe and Vanderpool. So that's not a coincidence that the two coaches that were brought in by this front office are here, and the rest of the coaches got cleared out from the previous tenure. So what I'm saying that to say is, I feel like based on realistic expectations, I don't feel like the front office thought that this team was going to be anything other than a very bad team. They were set up to be a very bad team. So I'm just critiquing them on the scale of a really bad, like a team that was supposed to be really bad. I think where they get a C minus from me is the things that you mentioned is Poole's poor play, and there was a lot of time wasted playing Poole in a spot that wasn't helping him produce at a high level. I think we could see within the first 10 games that him and Tyus weren't working. And that doesn't mean that you immediately change things after 10 games, but I think after the 20 game mark, that's when you got to start saying, okay, we have a large enough sample size to see that this isn't working. We need to make changes. I think they let some opportunities go in terms of development with Bilal, which is something that's a mark as the whole organization, because that should have been the number one priority. Now, I think something we don't know is we're not behind the scenes to see the day-to-day with Bilal in terms of him in practice, in film sessions and different things like that. So they could have been just gradually trying to put more on Bilal's plate as the season wore on and not trying to overload him with too much at one time, being a very young rookie. So I think sometimes it's easy to say, oh, well, they should have done this and that with Bilal. I agree. I wish I had seen more in terms of some of the on-ball reps and certain parts of his development I would have liked to have seen more of, and that's a bit disappointing. So that's a kind of a bit of a mark on the season as well. Just didn't see as much as we wanted to see. And as you mentioned, a lot of the young players, well, pretty much none of the other young players popped other than Jared Butler towards the end of the season, and Vucevic, who was only around for the end of the season. He obviously was a bright spot towards the end, but for the bulk of the season, we didn't really see any young guys pop pretty much at all, outside of obviously the Dennys and Kisperts and Bilals. I'm not including them in that. I'm talking about all the other young guys like Baldwin Jr., Johnny Davis, Ryan Rollins ended up, having the whole stealing saga. So that was, I mean, that has to be a negative because we were all hoping he could be at least something, and that's just another negative there too. So with all that said, I think that a C minus is where I'm at because I didn't expect much. I don't think the front office really expected much. I think there's things that you can obviously point at that are worth critiquing, which I didn't. And there's obviously more things that you could critique than the things that you and I have both named here. But I think all in all, like, I just have a hard time giving them too harsh of a grade based on where the expectations are. But to the point you're making, or you've made earlier in the pod about the offseason, this is kind of it. Like, this is where I'm really going to start grading them is now. They're approaching a like 1 year in the position of the new front offices in their roles, and they've had a full year to assess the team, make changes. But this is the first full offseason that they're getting, with obviously the experience on the job they already have. And this is where I'm really going to start saying, okay, I'm not going to give them this, the kind of pass I've been giving them where I'm just not harshly critiquing them because they're new. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of changes that need to be made. I think now is the time where we're really going to see what the front office is made of. But in terms of team success on the court, I just have a hard time giving them any lower than a C minus, but I totally understand why they're getting low marks like the F you gave them, Chase.
Yeah, I was probably pretty harsh with the F. Because there's a couple bright spots on the team. It's just my grading scale. I guess I scaled it differently. I was scaling it based on them being the second worst team in the league and the worst team in the Wizards history. Just based on that, hard to give them anything other than an F. But of course, based on your scale, I definitely agree. Probably a little closer to a C minus. There's things to be happy about. So I'll not be the Grinch here in the off season. I'll increase it to a D minus.
I will say your reasoning makes total sense. So I'm not critiquing your F. I totally understand. I mean, if you're the worst team, your record in team history, and you're the second worst team in the league, and the team that's worse than you is the Pistons, which is like the lowest of bars, is to be better than them. So I mean, I'm with you. I just think that like if I was the Pistons and I was grading my team, it'd be an F. Like we were trying to be good. We've been bad for like 4 years now, and we paid this coach all this money, and we're still this bad. Like that's an F. So I think that I just look at it like relative to expectations. But your explanation makes perfect sense. Let's move to the front office, though, in terms of grading them. So, Michael Winger, Will Dawkins. I don't remember exactly what month they were hired, but it was further into the offseason than we're currently in. So we're approaching a year, with a year on the job for them, but they've had a full season. They've obviously had a draft cycle at this point. And they've obviously made a few trades. So if you're listening to this podcast, you know what those trades are. So I'm not going to regurgitate them here. But Chase, what grade would you give the front office for their first seasons on the job?
Now, this one's a tricky one because obviously this is a different grade than we're giving just the total team grade year one. This is the front office grade, so the direction that we think this front office is going. I'm still positive on what this front office is doing. There's obviously been some things that maybe not all of us have agreed with. I haven't necessarily loved how they've used their two-way spots in year one. I think they could have better utilized those, but all in all, I think they hit on their draft pick, and that's what I'm mostly grading them on is going to be how they draft, because we've seen what the last couple regimes have done in draft wise, especially second rounders, for example, have not hit on just about a single one in my lifetime. So early on, I think we may have hit on a second round pick, and I do think we hit on Bilal there early in the first round. So overall, I'm giving them a plus grade for drafting. Now, as far as trades, I think if we like how they're drafting, then we should like the trade for Gafford. Obviously, Gafford has played extremely well since he's moved on to the Mavericks, but that's just not the Gafford that we had, and it never was going to be the Gafford we had unless we had Luka Doncic. Let's be real about it. He's kind of the perfect player alongside Luka, but we don't have anything close to a guy like Luka around here, and I just don't think we were maximizing, getting the best out of Daniel Gafford. So to me, getting another first round pick in the next draft, obviously it's looking like one of the weaker drafts in recent memory. I'm still going to give that a plus mark. I really liked that trade. But you also on the trade side of things, it was worth the swing for Jordan Poole. I think it's still early, obviously, in Jordan Poole's tenure with the Wizards, but I think you can't give that a plus mark quite yet. It was absolutely worth the swing. We were all very excited about it when it happened, and it made perfect sense. Getting off of Chris Paul, I think obviously just 1 year on his deal, but he had an awful year himself. So it's not really if you're looking at least comparing the players, I wouldn't say it was a net positive, net negative. I think player wise. You cancel those out, but you would have liked to get more in that trade. Ryan Rollins has not showed anything. Obviously, he left our team for circumstances that we didn't like seeing here, some stealing issues. And then Patrick Baldwin Jr., just really, I don't think he's an NBA player. So overall, that trade, I think that's a downgrade for me. I think they should have traded Tyus Jones at the deadline. They should have gotten anything for Tyus Jones. If he's in the building next offseason, next year, I'm not very happy because we saw a better Jordan Poole in the point guard position, and Tyus Jones really struggled to not, he didn't struggle. He struggled on the defensive end, and he struggled to make an impact next to Jordan Poole. So to me, it just doesn't make sense to bring him back. I would have liked to get something for him. That's a downgrade for me as well. And then Kyle Kuzma, we may get more value for him later on. We may not. He said he wanted to stay in the building, and they didn't trade him because of that. But I really think we were probably going to get picks in this upcoming draft for him. And I really don't like this draft. It's been listed numerous times by numerous people that this is one of the worst drafts probably in NBA history. So I'm not super upset about keeping Kyle Kuzma and trying to get something for him. Hopefully at the next deadline to get a 2025 first. Those are the ones that are going to be more valuable, and maybe a team will become calling for Kuzma then. But as far as the entire direction, there's some pluses, there's some minuses. I still am happy with the direction this front office is going, and until they miss on a draft pick, they have not done so yet in my eyes. I believe in Bilal, I believe in Vucevic. I'm happy with the direction of this team, and I think that we have a real front office in place that has a plan. Obviously, year one, it was always meant to be a bad team, and I think we're meant to be bad next year as well. So let's buckle in and trust the process. Hopefully better than the 76ers have done, but I'm really excited about the direction. I'm going to give them, as far as a front office grade, I think I'm going to go B minus, potentially a B. Can't give them an A, can't give them a, you know, really a high B because of having the worst season in team history and not too many young guys to really hang your hat on moving into the next offseason. But this is really what they've inherited and what they've brought in, I'm happy with. So B minus for me.
I really like the breakdown you kind of just gave of the ebbs and flows and ups and downs a little bit and the positives and not so positives. I think that's a, you know, a pretty good breakdown of things. I agree with you. I would trend more just towards a solid B than kind of the, you know, B or B minus, but like kind of the in between you were at. But I would give them a solid B. I think that I have a hard time. I would have a hard time seeing them having much lower than a B. Or like a B, like at the B range. I mean, I definitely don't think you could give them an A. I think an A would be reserved for if Bilal looked like the next big thing from the jump or something like that. And I think that if it looked like a home run pick, then they would easily get an A from me. But like we've mentioned, to me, their drafting is what I'm weighing the heaviest, especially early on in this rebuild that we're in. That's where the bulk of their grade is going to come for me, is how are they drafting and how are they using their assets, like that, those two things, asset management and drafting. And obviously it's like, well, duh, like that's what everyone's grading it off of too. But what I guess I mean is I'm not going to include much, or I don't have at this point, I don't have much expectation for on-court performance. So that's very low kind of on my grading scale in terms of the front office at this point. I think player development does matter though. And I think that we did see from the young guys on the team that we actually think have game, I think we did see growth. Denny, obviously, Corey Kispert. I thought Bilal had a pretty good rookie season. I thought that he showed growth to a point, and I think towards the end, he kind of hit a wall a little bit. Towards the end of his rookie season anyway, because he obviously only played 60 some games because of injury. But I mean, it's like, is it their fault that Johnny Davis can't play? They didn't draft him. So I have a hard time like including that in their grade. Like, I just don't think he can play. So, you know, what do you make of that? I mean, Baldwin was more of a flyer. So it's like, do you really hold that against them? I think the two-way point you made, I mean, Amarui, you know, we know what he is. He's a hustle guy. He doesn't have much upside, but they did find like a Jared Butler type. I think that one thing that really matters to me is being the ability to hit on later picks. And look, Vukcevic might not be a star or anything, you know, a high level NBA player, but I think at a minimum, they've gotten a rotation big, and that's a hit in terms of second round picks. I mean, if you can get a solid rotation player, I think that that's a hit. I think that it's very argued, you know, you could debate Vuk's upside, but I think that there is clearly upside there for him to be a pretty good NBA player. So I think that's exciting. That's a hit for me in terms of the front office. But all in all, I think what gives them a B in my mind is they've picked a direction and they stuck with it. And that's kind of the so far. And that's the thing that I think that matters to me the most. And I see that in mixed with they're seemingly pretty proactive. And I like that. Like, to me, the Gafford trade was a good sign to me of where their head is at in terms of team building. Because on its face, it's like, oh, Gafford's only 25. He's on a reasonable contract. Why would you trade that guy? But when you really zoom out, well, Gafford, you know, we talked about the Gafford trade ad nauseum at this point. But I look at that and like, to me, turning him into a first round pick is a much better use of the asset from the Wizards standpoint. And I like that they were proactive in that thinking of, hey, his value is high now. Let's cash in now. Like, who knows where his value is? I mean, high in the sense of like the ability to get a first round pick compared to maybe in the future, maybe no one's offering a first round pick or whatever. Like, striking while that the opportunity presents itself matters to me in terms of a front office grade. And like I said, them sticking to a plan, like they came in, they immediately dealt with the Bradley Beal thing. They didn't wait and kind of mess around with trying to make Bradley Beal, like the Bradley Beal thing, happen for any longer than it needed to happen. They came in and immediately we heard rumors of them trading Bradley Beal, and it happened relatively quickly. And then picking a lane in terms of, look, we're going to be bad. This is the goal here, is just to kind of bottom out and rebuild the franchise. They've signed everyone. Every contract they've given out has been a team-friendly contract that's a tradable asset, at least thus far. They've made trades where they're turning guys that can't play at all in Gallinari and Mike Muscala into Bagley, who's a nice rotation big, and 2 second-round picks. I just look at all the deals, and you could rattle off more stuff, but all the deals they've made, I see the vision. I think that the pool one is obviously the one you can critique the most, is, well, do they really need to take on that future salary? But for a team that doesn't have much salary on the books going forward, and the ones that are on the books are tradable, to me, you got to have somebody making money. So pool making 30 million or whatever it is a year, I just don't look at that as some terrible contract, especially if they're going to put him in his natural position to succeed. Now, I think where I do wonder is, like, if they do draft a point guard or something like that, then where does that leave you with Poole? If you see, like, oh, we really like Nikola Topic, he's our, we look at him as our point guard of the future, and you obviously would pick him because you're not going to let Jordan Poole stop you from picking that kind of player. Well, what does that mean for Poole at that point? Because he would be back to playing off ball or maybe a six man role. So who knows with that? But I just think, all in all, I'm kind of going long here on this answer, but I think all in all, I just look at the moves they made. Clearly they have a plan in place, and that's what matters to me very heavily, is, are you following the plan that you guys have set? And you don't seem indecisive about what the plan is here. The plan is to be bad. The plan is to acquire assets. The plan is to have draft capital. The plan is to have team-friendly salaries on the books. And hopefully they continue to be proactive. So based on what we've seen so far, I don't have a ton to complain about. There's obviously things that you can nitpick. I can't give them an A, but I just think it's just been a solid B.
Yeah, I completely forgot to mention the Bagley trade. That was nothing but a win in my eyes. Obviously, keeping the contract of Bagley and getting a second round pick for two of the worst players in recent Wizards memory. I will take that any day of the week. And another thing I even forgot to mention was the extension a year early for Denny. That is looking extremely team friendly. So kudos to them for that contract. That looks like a big steal. That they didn't need to do. That wasn't a player that they drafted. They very well could have wiped their hands with it and said, "We didn't draft him. We don't need him." And that was a big W, extending him this off season as opposed to next off season where they'd be really dealing some cash, I think, for Denny right about now. So great team friendly deal. I think a B is a great grade for the front office.
That's a good segue, Chase, into my next topic here. So I think we should do some player awards. Let's just focus on most improved player and MVP, and we'll even do a little bit of most disappointing player, because I just got to get a take off for that one. But let's start with most improved player. I'll take the floor for this one first. I feel like it's a pretty clear-cut answer. Probably the only player on the team that got legit most improved player actual votes from voters that vote on the award, and that's Denny Avdia. I feel like that's just the obvious answer. Now, I think that guys like Corey Kispert had some good improvement this season, so maybe that's debatable on some level. But I feel like, just from a statistical standpoint, we have him. He had a 5 point bump in points per game, so 9.2 to 14.7 in rebounds per game. He went from 6.4 to 7.2 assists a game, 2.8 to 3.8. So 14, 7, and let's say 4 don't leap off the page as some crazy numbers, but his progression, especially from early on in the season to kind of the midway point through the rest of the season where he really hit his stride, I really feel like you saw a different side of Denny that we hadn't seen, in terms of aggression, in terms of confidence in his shot, in terms of his finishing ability at the rim. I really thought you saw a guy that showed that upside that a lot of his believers really believed in since he's been here. And I think that even people like me who are more indifferent, not saying that I didn't think Denny was going to be a good player, but I kind of felt like his ceiling was more of like a fifth best player on a team, more of that just kind of connected defensive guy. More than maybe he could do a little bit more than that. And I think now we're seeing that maybe there's a guy in there that could potentially be like the third best player on a pretty good to really good team. I'm not saying that's definitive in my mind. I think there's obviously more to be seen with Denny, but we have a big enough sample size for it not to be like, oh, this is just a hot stretch. I think around the time where he had that 43-point game against the Pelicans, and I kind of was wondering if this was more of like a blimp than a trend where he was kind of just having a really hot stretch of games, but it wasn't going to be sustainable long term. And while he hasn't been able to replicate that high of a 43-point game where he was kind of doing everything, I felt like he had a lot of really good games where maybe he was scoring in the 20s, but he was also rebounding and playing defense and assisting and kind of doing a bunch of things. And we saw towards the end of the season, they even let him run point. We saw some good play out of him there too. So I just think we saw a lot from Denny. His shooting improved. He went from 29% to 37% from three, which is a huge deal for Denny. Like, it's a huge deal that he can actually he was shooting off the dribble. He was shooting better in catch and shoots. And that part of his game evolving to where teams are actually going to respect that part of his game opens up the driving part of his game and opens up the floor for the rest of the team. So I thought that was a revelation that his shooting took that big of a jump. And it felt sustainable that his shooting just looked better. He was more confident in it. And we saw that kind of from the jump of the season, but definitely throughout the midpoint of the season where he was just continuing to shoot the ball. And when I saw him doing step backs and stuff, I was like, oh, okay, he's really has faith in the work that he's put in. This isn't just some hot shooting where he's, you know, having a bit of shooting luck. He's really confident in the work he's put in. You could see that on the floor. His overall field goal percentage went up, I believe, from 43% to 50%. And so Denny just proved a lot to me in this season, and was obviously the kind of the shining star of the season, the silver lining of what was a pretty dismal overall season from an on-court standpoint. And I think it's just nice that he was able to solidify himself as a core piece. And I think going into the season, I wondered if the team had any core pieces other than Bilal, obviously. And I think that it's pretty safe to say that he solidified himself as a piece that they really should hold on to, especially on that contract. Now, I will say this, if some team blows them away with some big offer to get Denny, you know, out of DC, I do think that if it's something where a team's offering you three first round picks or something like that, that you would consider it, obviously. So that doesn't mean that he's a core piece, that he's untouchable. But I do think it would take a really good offer that was just, you know, someone blowing me over to consider moving him at this point, because I think we've seen he still has more room to grow. And I'm hoping that he gets even more to do next season with the ball, and we can see him kind of open up his bag even more. But so Denny's my pick. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the answer you have to go with. Any other answer I don't think would make sense. Obviously, he did get actual votes for most improved player this season. And he was truly impressive to me. I think I didn't foresee this leap that Denny was taking, because he took the strides in just about every aspect of the game. Obviously, defensively, he may have taken a slight step back, but that's just because of what he was shouldering offensively. Once Wes Unseld Jr. was fired, Brian Keefe took over, I think we saw the role for Denny increase. And for whatever reason, he could never find his footing with Wes Unseld Jr. There was even times where he was sitting him at the end of games this, you know, early on in the season. And once he hit, you know, in the midseason mark, he really took that next step as a player. And I've been just truly impressed with the leap Denny took. 3-point shooting wise, I did not expect him to even become, I think, a competent 3-point shooter. He was really, in my eyes, a good 3-point shooter. You know, obviously moving from sub 30% last season to 37.4, that's an extreme leap. That's not even just a decent leap. That's an extreme leap. And if he can just continue that next season, build on What he showed this year, he's going to be a really, really good player in all aspects, because I don't think offensively he has too many weaknesses now. You know, last season, when he was driving the lane, he would take maybe a floater or be falling backwards and go up really, really weak. And this year we saw him going up, you know, putting his shoulder into guys and actually going up strong a lot of times, putting down some vicious dunks where he would have done a floater last season. So to me, just his aggression, his three-point shooting ability, and just having the ball in his hands more this year, playing a little bit, we saw towards the end of the season, Point Denny. This is something that people have been begging for a couple of years now, and I wasn't fully on board with it, you know, before this season. And I think we saw this season he is at least somewhat capable of that, at least in certain stretches of games. So I've been extremely impressed with Denny, and that's got to be the clear answer for most improved.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear cut, and I'm excited. I'm excited for the progression of Denny. Well, Chase, what about MVP? I know it's kind of weird to grant MVP on a team that's won that won 15 games, but if you had to pick a most valuable player for the Wizards season, who would you pick?
And I think this is going to be extremely hot take. I think most people would say Kyle Kuzma, and I won't. The MVP, at least for my watching experience this year, was Denny. He was the most improved. But for me, I think he's got to be the MVP, at least for I don't know if this makes sense, but for the vision that the team is taking. As in, he is the most valuable player to this team moving forward. Whether he was the most valuable player this season, obviously, that's a different question. I don't know how we're grading this. This is how I'm grading it. Kyle Kuzma obviously had a strong year, over 22 points. It wasn't efficient. I didn't think it was winning basketball a lot of the time. I think the most valuable player to winning basketball for the Wizards this year, to me, was Denny. In the games that he played well, a lot of the times in the wins this season were because of how well Denny played. I think this is probably a real hot take, and we'll probably get some people calling me crazy. To me, I just think the entirety of the season, especially mid-year, we really saw an improved Denny, and in all aspects of the game, defensively, offensively, moving the ball around, taking big shots, attacking the rim. He's my season MVP, at least for my watching experience. He made me watch games. Kyle Kuzma, I didn't ever turn on the game because Kyle Kuzma was in it, and that's just the way it was for me. I'm excited about the young guys, and not necessarily Kyle Kuzma. I just don't think he will be here on the next good team, and I do think Denny is capable of that. So that's my hot take. Denny was the Wizards MVP for me this year. Just an overall really strong season, shooting over 50%, over 37% from three, dishing, bringing down rebounds, taking the ball down the court, coast to coast, defending a lot of the team's best players many nights. So for me, he was the team MVP, and I'd love to hear you tell me how crazy I am for that.
Well, I'm here to tell you that if they're calling you crazy, they're going to call me crazy. And I don't think it's a hot take. I honestly think it's the right take. I think Denny was the MVP of the team. I honestly didn't really think much about it when I was thinking about it, when we, you know, prepping for the podcast. Denny was the first person that came to my mind. And I don't think that most valuable, I know if you looked at the stats, right, and you just, someone that didn't know anything about the Wizards and they pulled up the stats and they said, they would say, well, how is the guy that averaged 22 points a game? And, you know, I don't even know what he averaged rebound wise, to be honest, because I haven't looked at Kyle's stats in a while. But let's just say it was like 6 or 7 rebounds. Like, how is that guy not the most valuable player with a guy that averaged, you know, 14 and 7? But that's why watching the games is so important. And, you know, you see people will like people that like look at box scores and they'll be like, oh, well, you know, such and such only had this many points, but it's like, yeah, but he's the best defender on their team and he's locking down the other player or whatever. So you're missing the context of what he actually is bringing to the table. And I think in terms of Denny didn't hurt the team. And I think that that's what I think that was one of my biggest takeaways from Denny is like, I think there's, you know, obviously there's, when I say hurt the team, like, I'm not saying Denny's perfect. What I'm saying is in the grand scheme of things, in terms of night to night, I think that Kyle Kuzma, despite scoring more points, I think he did things that actively hurt the team trying to win games more so than Denny did. But more importantly, I think that Denny just impacted the game in a multitude of ways. And I agree with the way you looked at it. Like, in terms of the vision of the team, I think that Denny had a more valuable season to what they're trying to accomplish now and going forward. And I think that's just the proper way to look at it. I think if you're analyzing the Wizards, maybe from an outside perspective, you would probably say Kuzma. And I think probably from the outside perspective, people might argue, how could you not say Kuzma? But I think from people that really follow the team night to night, and there's only so many of us that do that, right? I think it's hard to have another answer outside of Denny, despite Kyle Kuzma having a pretty good season generally. So I'm right there with you. I don't really think it's a hot take. I think that Denny, his improvement, his growth had the most value in his production, had the most actual impact towards winning basketball games, despite the team not winning many. I think that that's the right answer. MVP, Denny Avdia, for this season. And as we mentioned, we were talking about the most improved player. I'm just really excited to see where things go. I don't mean to kick Kuzma out the door, but as I mentioned on a previous podcast, I think now's the time to cash in that asset. I think that being bad is going to happen this next year. And I think this is the year where I want them to say, okay, like, we have Denny, we have Bilal, we have Vucevic, we have the number whatever top six pick that we're getting this draft, the 26th pick, I believe, that we're getting, like, that in, I guess, the second round pick that's in the 50s. Like, these are our young guys, and Kispert too, hopefully. And Kispert, like, these are our young guys. Let's put some vets around these guys, but let's let them do their thing. Like, let's see what we have in this group of young guys. Let's let Poole, like, barring them drafting a point guard, let's let Poole play point. Let's let Denny play kind of forward where without having to deal with the Kyle Kuzma show. Like, we're going to be bad. We're trying to get an Ace Bailey or a Cooper Flag or whatever, but let's really see what these guys can do. So now we can make a real assessment of how we're going to make this team look going forward. Because I would imagine that next offseason, after that draft with the Cooper Flag and Ace Bailey, that's where we're really going to start to see the team come together. Because they're going to have three drafts under their belt at that point. It's going to be Bilal, whoever they pick this year, and that group from the Cooper Flag draft. That's going to be three drafts worth. We're really going to see, like, the team kind of come together for, okay, here's the core that we're building around. How do we supplement that going forward? And at least kind of how I see it going. So they got to figure out what they have. And it, like, I think they are figuring it out. And they did a good job of letting Denny do his thing. But I think they need to continue down that path going forward next season and give him even more of a free reign in terms of running the offense and being a more high usage player. Because what if there's even more that, like, honestly, Denny showed me more offense this year than I thought he had. So who's to say he doesn't have more? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm fully with you. And here I was thinking I had a hot take. Thinking we might finally disagree on something. We're one mind here in Wizards Nation, apparently, because I thought that would be a hot take, but I do think that's the right answer, that he was really the most valuable player to what this Wizards team, what the direction is that they're going. So I'm fully with you. I think they need to give him even more of the, you know, more of the platter next year, see what he can do even more with the ball in his hands. We saw it a little bit more towards the end. And I think obviously we had the injury issues. Tyus Jones was kind of injured next year. And I do hope the plan isn't to bring him back, because that's just another player that's taking the ball out of Denny's hands for no reason. Another reason why I don't want Tyus in the building, even more so than Jordan Poole, is getting the ball more so in Denny's hands too.
Yeah, I think I've come around with the Poole thing to having more excitement about where it could go with him again. I think, you know, early on, obviously, I was really happy with the move, and I think it was hard not to sour on him somewhat based on what we saw early in the season. even if it wasn't totally his fault in terms of the like him playing the two guard opposed to being more on ball. And you know, even you heard Winger in his like exiting press conference or like end of season press conference, he kind of talked about Poole being in a prolonged slump. So the organization obviously was very aware and they agreed that it was not just him being played out of position. It was also he wasn't playing that well. So I think, you know, at that point we all soured on him a bit. But I will say I was one of the people that did come out and say on this podcast, hey, I don't think Jordan Poole just sucks all of a sudden. Like, he's playing bad now. He might be literally playing like the worst player in the league now, but there's no way he actually sucks. So I will give myself that credit where I wasn't one of these people saying he should be out the league or he shouldn't play at all. Like, those takes were ridiculous to me, but I do understand why people soured on him. And I've come back around to feel more like, hey, you know what? I think now that we saw him in different roles, you know, six man starting point guard, that I would just go into the season with him at starting point guard, again, barring them drafting a point guard, I guess, with their top pick in this upcoming draft. But I think I'm more excited to see what that looks like with a different coach than Wes Unseld Jr. and a larger sample size of him running the point. So anyway, not to make this about Poole, but I've kind of turned the corner with that, and I feel more excited about having him on the team again. And I think I went through a phase of, you know, soured and I felt more indifferent about it. Like, okay, well, if he's on the team, he's on the team. But now I feel more like, hey, you know what? Like, I think we saw something that we could build off of. So I think that's where I'm at with the Poole thing. But it'll be interesting to see going forward just how the team kind of connects in terms of how they allow Denny to what am I trying to say? Like, do they keep Kuzma around? Do they let Denny kind of have more free reign in the offense? That's, you know, that kind of thing. But it'll be interesting. Chase, I want to ask you about one last award. I feel like we have to have a little bit of honest negativity with this thing, because it's like when you win 15 games, it can't all be like, who's your best, you know, who's your most improved? Who's your MVP? Who is your most disappointing player? Player that maybe let you down the most, or however you want to take that award. In Chase's mind, what did you think of that?
You know, early season, I think it was definitely trending towards Jordan Poole. Just the fact that what we gave up for him, we were hoping that he was going to be taking that next step and being a real key piece to our franchise. And early on, he was potentially one of the worst players in the league. Like, to your point, once he moved into the correct role, I think we saw a much better Jordan Poole, and I think we saw something to work with here moving forward. So because of that, I had been so high on the possibility of Johnny Davis taking that next step here. Summer League came around and he looked a little bit more comfortable. He looked like he had maybe taken a couple more strides, because even towards the end of last season, in silly season, he had a couple games there where he looked like, okay, maybe he could do a little bit on the court. And then this season rolled around and he made me look real dumb with all my tweets, propping him up this off season. So, to me, he was easily the most disappointing player. He took, in my eyes, no strides, shooting wise. He just doesn't look comfortable. He just doesn't look like an NBA player with the ball in his hands. And, unfortunately now we're 2 years in, and, this wasn't the front office that brought him in. So to me, if he doesn't show anything this off season, I'm more than comfortable just letting him go and, you know, using that roster spot to someone that may deserve it. Cause unfortunately here, 2 years in, this is looking like one of the worst lottery picks in NBA history, which is, I hate to put that on him, but that's really the case. And he probably shouldn't have been drafted there in the first place, but he was. I had said all off season, I'm throwing away his draft positioning. That doesn't matter to me. If he can be an elite role player in his role, you know, a really strong defender, can provide at least a little bit offensively, then I would be happy. But he's not that. He unfortunately never showed that. Even towards the end of the season, during silly season, he had a couple games where, you know, he hit a couple shots, but it's not NBA caliber, and even G League caliber. I think the times that he was sent down to the G League, it's not like he was blowing the doors off them there. So, I'd hate to give up on a guy that early, and obviously he had a kid, and he, you know, he's a new dad, and All kinds of things that can contribute to a young player not succeeding early on. And we've seen guys like even like Jalen Suggs, really bad his first couple of years, and now year three, he's a contributor on a playoff team. So maybe it comes this offseason, and we forget all about it. But as of year two here, he was easily the most disappointing Wizard, and I just don't foresee anything coming of it, which is really unfortunate. I think this is a wasted top 10 pick, and it's not the front office that drafted him. So wipe the slate if he's not the guy.
Yeah, when I was thinking about this award, there was no other player that came to my mind other than Johnny Davis, unfortunately. And on a team that finished with 15 wins, that I mean, the fact that it's one player that you can just immediately, I feel like our whole fan base would in unison agree with that. And I'm sure some people might say Poole, because I thought that was a good point that you made, that, you know, Poole was kind of maybe along the lines of what you thought initially, but the more you thought about it or however you phrased it, I agree Poole could be an answer here, because some people might feel like I already knew Johnny Davis couldn't play. So, you know, it wasn't that disappointing to find it out even more. But just the fact that he looks so lost every time he plays offense is just so defeating. It's and then you turn on the Thunder and Jalen Williams is like a borderline all-star in year two and one of the best wing defenders in the league already in year two. And it makes it feel even worse because that was a guy that the fan base had identified as the guy that, you know, kind of people wanted. And not to say that, you know, drafting him was an end all be all, but they literally just picked the worst of the bunch in that pick. And I know on this podcast, I've said it a bunch that it just blows my mind that he was kind of widely regarded as a top 10, top 12 pick and before that draft, because it just, when you watch him play, you honestly feel like he's a two-way guy at best, and there's no way he was a top 10 pick. But the reality for Johnny Davis is his confidence is just gone on offense, right? And we all know that. I almost wish somebody would grab him and just say, look, man, you're Johnny effing Davis, like you used to be the Big Ten player of the year. Like, that doesn't mean anything in the NBA. I realize that. Someone, I know someone's listening to this, like, who cares about that? He's in the NBA now. But at one point, he was a very confident NBA player, a very confident basketball player. He was a very confident basketball player at one point in his life, not that long ago. And I know confidence is really easy to lose it sometimes. And, you know, Lord knows, who knows what's going on in his personal life. Who knows? I don't know. But sometimes you need someone to remind you of who you are. And that doesn't mean he's going to be a star. And that's not what I mean. But I think someone needs to shake him and say, look, man, like, look, you got drafted top 10 for a reason. You got to find your niche in the NBA if you want to stick. It doesn't mean you have to be a phenomenal shooter or a phenomenal offensive player to stick. You really don't. But like you mentioned Jalen Suggs, I think that's a perfect like analog for Johnny Davis. Jalen Suggs hung his hat in his first 2 years on being a really good defender. And he was that, especially in year two. He was a really good defender who still shot bad from three and couldn't shoot. He really shot the ball well this year in year three and has made a lot of progress on both sides of the ball. But it started with him finding his niche was, okay, maybe I'm not the star I was in college and hasn't translated to the NBA immediately. But what I am going to do is play defense and be, you know, and Johnny Davis does play defense. So I'll give him that. But he really needs to, if he wants to stick, he's going to have to really look himself in the mirror and decide, am I going to try to play like Johnny Davis again? Like, in just my mindset, that doesn't mean that you go out there and try the same things necessarily, but I think that his mindset really needs a reset in terms of his belief in himself and his abilities, because you'll see little flashes. I forget who they were playing, but there was a clip where he did like a dribble move I had never seen him do. Like he like made a cross and then like went to the rim and finished, and it was late in the season here. And I thought, okay, like that looked like the guy like that was a quick little glimmer of the guy at Wisconsin. Like I saw confidence in that move, and like but you just see it. It's so like few and far between. You see these little glimmers from him where it's like, okay, like if you could channel that consistently, you'd be a pretty decent player. But it's so disappointing because it just doesn't happen enough. And it actually happens. It's like, it's very rare that it happens. So I'm just saying all that to say I don't have much faith, or actually any faith, in Johnny Davis becoming a good NBA player, especially on the Wizards. And that's really disappointing. I was really hoping that, based off the way he ended his rookie season, where you just saw more of you saw more from him that gave you some level of optimism going into the offseason that, okay, maybe his rookie year was rough, but he could, you know, have a good offseason, come back and show more of why he was once a highly regarded prospect. But unfortunately, I just don't see it. I don't think that there really is much upside there. I think I've landed on they might as well bring him back into the fold next year, because why not? But, you know, he's young, and I guess there is some percentage of a chance that he could be something. But, you know, if they decide to cut bait, I wouldn't be mad at it.
Yeah, I think he most likely will still be around next year. But if he stinks it up, you know, again in the off season, I don't know if the plan is to play him in summer league at all. I think that he should. He hasn't showed anything at the NBA level for him to sit in those games in my eyes. So if he stinks it up in the summer league this year and just doesn't look like a confident player, then we can cut bait and I won't be upset. If he's around and we can see a little bit from him next year, then by all means, let's see what we got. But I just think that roster spot's going to end up being better utilized elsewhere. Just like the two-way spots, I think we can get some better young players in the building in year two. So I'm rooting for him. I want him to succeed. This is not me rooting against Johnny Davis and hoping that he sucks and wishing him ill will, because I don't. I want him to be the player that he was drafted top 10. I think we saw offense in college. Like we saw it. So it was there at one point. What happened to it? Is it physical? Is it mental? Is it a combination of the both? I don't know, but I want to see that Johnny Davis that was, you know, beating guys up in the Big Ten and looking like a dog. He just doesn't look like that guy.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that's most surprising to me. And I want to be clear, it's not that I feel like his game from college should translate to the NBA. Like, I know that he took a lot of tough mid-range shots in college, and he's not overly athletic, so that's part of his struggle, is that he can't get by people at the NBA level like he once did. So I do understand that. So I'm not saying that it should be literally the same type of play style, but I do think sometimes you just need to be reminded that, look, dude, you can play basketball. There's a reason why you were drafted 10th. A lot of people thought you were worthy of this draft slot. And look, that doesn't mean anything in the real world that you were drafted. I mean, who cares where you were drafted once you're drafted, I guess. You know, you could make that point. But if I was trying to encourage him, if I was a close friend or a trainer or something like that, I would say, dude, you can play at this level, but you got to believe you can play at this level, and you got to find your niche. What is Johnny Davis going to bring to the table that makes you a rotation NBA player? Now, if that's me mastering, you know, if I'm Johnny Davis, if that's me mastering the corner three, like, okay, I am going to master the corner three this offseason and be a great defender. So when they kick it out to me in those corners, I am a solid shooter from there. Maybe I'm not a knockdown three-point shooter from anywhere else or off the dribble, but if I can knock down corner threes, that gives me something that makes me more playable. You know, like that type of thing. I forget who I was listening to, but he was saying that the mistake that players make, I think it was David Thorpe, who was on the Low Post, a recent episode of the Low Post podcast. He's a coach, trainer, basketball writer, all that. But he was saying that something that a mistake he sees players make when they're training is that they try to get better at like too many things at once, so they don't get better at like anything specifically. So he's like, the great players kind of go into the off season and say, I'm going to focus on getting better in these areas. And then it's like your efforts of mastery are being focused on specific things versus kind of this granular, like just generally getting better at everything. Now, that doesn't mean you're not trying to get better at everything, but you get my point. It's like, okay, I'm going to try to get better at my on ball defense and my 3-point shooting. Like, that's what I'm really going to focus on this summer to take my game to another level. And then once you do that in those areas, you try to master the next thing, the next offseason. Like, you're gradually adding to your game, but you're putting a lot of repetition into these specific things in the offseason going into the following season. So I think that Johnny Davis, he's not going to go from being terrible to great in one season. Like, he's not going to go from being looking like a guy that doesn't belong in the league to a high level role player. Like, it's going to take time, but I really think it would help if he had a niche, something he could lean on to be kind of his bread and butter in the league and try to grow in those areas. But he already can play defense. So it needs to be something on offense. Like, okay, what can I do? Like, I don't have the skill to drive by people. But like Jalen Suggs, for example, you don't see Jalen Suggs taking people off the dribble like he did in college. That's not what he does in the NBA. He plays defense and shoots threes. Now, that doesn't mean he doesn't pump and go, but he really has become like a 3-and-D guard, basically, where he knocks down the threes, I think around 40% now this season, and he's like a dog on defense, and his personality and his vigor that he plays with is so strong that it rubs off on everyone else. But Johnny Davis doesn't have, even though he plays defense, he doesn't have any personality on the court. He's just there. So it's like, you might be playing hard, but do you ever feel Johnny Davis through the screen? Like, you feel Jalen Suggs through the screen sometimes. You never feel Johnny Davis through the screen.
No, the only time you're feeling Johnny Davis through the screen is when you're cringing at something bad he's done. That's the only time that I even realize he's on the court. It's like, oh, Johnny's in and he missed a layup. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when you feel it, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's tough. I like you mentioned, I'm rooting for Johnny Davis, but I think that he's clearly the most disappointing player on the team this season. And it's like, I don't take any pleasure in it, you know? Like, I don't take pleasure in identifying him as disappointing and kind of like ragging on him, but it's just been really tough. I really think that next season is do or die for him. So I'm really hoping that he can, in terms of an NBA career, I should say, I really think that he needs to really get in the lab this off season. I hope that our front office and the new coaching staff that I guess is going to come in here, whether it's adding the Keith staff or it's replacing him and in terms of head coach and kind of however they do it, I really hope they have a strong plan in place for Davis this offseason to help him with one, with his shot, but two, to kind of regain some of his confidence in his offensive game. Because other players in the NBA they feed off of that lack of confidence. Like, oh, you don't think, you know, you're not even confident in your own game. Like, you're just, you're food for us out here, man. You're food that, you know, if you're not going to have that confidence in yourself. So, and I don't even think it's up for debate that confidence is like his biggest issue. It's like, he has no confidence, especially on offense.
Yeah. I almost thought that your most disappointing player was going to be Anthony Gill. We didn't have any, any strays at Anthony Gill this pod.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to go there with Anthony Gill. So I wish him well. Congrats on his, I know he won some type of award for being a great teammate, I believe, or great in the community or perhaps both. I forget what the award is, but the players and the coaches and the organization and the owner, like, all clearly value whatever he's bringing to the table that we don't see. Like, but I mean, we see him being a good teammate, but like, whatever he's bringing behind the scenes to the locker room, to just his presence, he seems like a great guy based on what everyone says. So look, there is value to that. I know I rag on him a lot. I just don't want to see him get minutes in real games that where we have other guys, like he was getting minutes over Vuk. And I'm like, bro, I don't want to see him play over Vuk at all, ever, never again. But I'll give him credit. Like, he actually had some good games down the stretch of the season, and he's okay in spot minutes. Like, I'll give him that. I just, when you're a rebuilding team that is trying to develop guys, I just don't want to waste time with Gil. So that's where I'm at.
I had to get you riled up on that real
I
quick.
know that's my biggest. It's like, out of everything I get animated about, it's Anthony Gill. Like, everything else I'm just like even keel about, but it's like Anthony Gill. Like, that's the one, when I watch them, that's the one thing that makes me mad. It's like, bro, why is he in the game? It was him and Xavier Cooks when he was on the team. Like, bro, like, why are these two in the game, man? Like, I just don't get it. And it's like Xavier Cooks, I remember when he got signed, people were like somewhat excited about it. I was like, no, like, I don't need to see it. It's just not. Neither one of them are good NBA players, so
Not into the 6'7" centers, huh?
nope. Well, Chase, on that note, let's get out of here. There's not much else to talk about, but obviously we're approaching draft season. We'll obviously touch on that. We'll have to have a couple guests on that are more tapped into the draft than we are, but obviously we're going to be locked in. We're gonna have to get our big boards together and kind of talk about the players we're most interested in the Wizards adding. I have a few, but I'll save that for our next episode where we kind of dive into some draft picks.
Yeah, we have nothing but the good times ahead for the Wizards podcast. This is the time where we can be excited about the direction. Obviously, 15 wins, a whole lot of losses. It was a rough year. Let's forget that all happened. We're getting players to help us. Let's do
Yeah,
it.
I'm excited, man. It should be a good off season. But please leave us a review. Let us know what you want us to talk about, all that good stuff I'm supposed to say, and we'll catch you guys on the next one.